This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a wild week on Capitol Hill. The Patriot Act, big budget cuts, huge military spending measures, and a hard run at drilling for oil in Anwar, with the holiday recess bearing down, with news of secret White House spying bearing down, with huge deficits and giant issues of principle and the Constitution on the table, Congress has been on fire. The once rock-solid Republican majority is fraying as party dissidents peel off in resistance. Democrats, now with some GOP company, are casting every issue in the most dire terms. The political weather on Capitol Hill and maybe in the nation is roiling. Up next on Point, high drama in Congress and the changing political chemistry on Capitol Hill. Joining me first from Washington, Gail Chadwick, congressional correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. Gail, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
So, Gail, so much going on. Tick off the big issues this week, and then we want to get your interpretation of the byplay behind them. But take us through the major pieces that have been on the table so far.
Well, you saw in one day two key defense bills pass, a defense appropriations bill that had hanging on it a very controversial provision to open drilling in Anwar, a defense authorization bill that had hanging on it a very controversial position, at least with the Bush White House, to ban torture of detainees.
Mm-hmm.
You had a $601 billion domestic spending bill, the largest, dealing with health, human services, and education. Very controversial, especially for moderate Republicans. A six-month extension of the USA Patriot Act, and nearly $40 billion in spending cuts.
So, Gail, at this point, the Senate, we've heard a lot of noise from lately, and they've taken some steps, but what's actually signed and sealed now? What's waiting to go back to the House? What's going to be done before year's end?
Well, that's a very interesting point, Tom, is what got not quite done. Let's take the $40 billion in spending cuts.
And this goes to student loans and to, is it Medicare,
mm-hmm. Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
This was forced by House conservatives who feel that Republicans have just left the deficit get out of control in their watch. And it's the first cut back on spending in Medicare and Medicaid, the growth in such spending.
Right. Democrats say it's attacking the poor. Republicans say we have to rein in this out-of-control spending.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But what it really was a real high-stakes game of chicken with Republicans wanting to push this through quickly because they don't want it coming up in an election year right up against their proposals for cutting billions in taxes,
right,
benefiting mainly the rich.
Mm.
What this sets up is the kind of class issue that can be very damaging to Republicans. They had wanted to put a lot of airtime between spending cuts and tax cuts.
Is that going to work? Are they going to get it done before the end of the year? How's the House looking at the Senate's action?
Well, the House, where not a single Democrat voted for this bill, is being asked to pass it by unanimous consent. And Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi says there's no way she'll agree to that. She wants a vote and a debate in the light of day, no earlier probably than February, which gives all the groups opposing these cuts, health groups, the AARP, more time to make their case, both to the public and to vulnerable lawmakers.
Now, where else do the Senate and House have to come to a meeting of minds after this wild week?
Well, the other key issue is the Patriot Act, which the White House, the Senate, and House Republican leaders played another example of a game of chicken here, where they challenged Democrats to let lapse a bill that they said was absolutely essential to national security. If there is another terrorist attack and Democrats have let this bill lapse, it falls on their head, in effect, they said. The president said he would not agree to an extension, nor would Senator Frist. But at the last minute, they did, because the Democrats had standing with them Republicans as well. Republicans like Larry Craig, who has been a kind of lifelong advocate for small government.
Craig of Idaho.
Of Idaho.
Chuck
right.
Hagel
also
of Nebraska, Sununu of New Hampshire, Lisa Murkowski, Alaska.
That's right.
Four.
They were not budging. and Democrats with these Republicans on their side had cover from the charge that they just wanted to scrap the Patriot Act. So it comes back. You know, Tom, the other aspect to this that is very interesting is the timing of a report, first in the New York Times, that the White House has been engaged, has authorized domestic spying without a warrant.
Mm-hmm.
Now that plays, may not play well outside the Beltway yet, because the public still, if polls are any indication, favor security over rights. They tend to think that it's other people that will be affected by
mm-hmm.
them. However, it's a very big issue inside Washington, and Republicans like Arlen Specter, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, were furious at this revelation.
Is that what's peeling some of these Republicans away?
Well,
is that what took Craig and Hagel and the crew, Sununu?
It certainly is giving them more support for what they're doing. And I think it's what stiffened their spine at the very end, because it came down to just a few hours. And you certainly didn't want to go into an election with an opponent being able to say, you voted against the Patriot Act, you voted against support for troops in the field.
Mm-hmm.
As Senator Kerry said, it takes a long time. It takes more than 30 seconds to undo that kind of an attack, and it was a gutsy vote for Democrats.
And yet, even on the $40 billion budget cut in the Senate, they had to bring in Dick Cheney to break a tie there, so clearly some Republicans not on board with that either.
No. They're very concerned, especially moderate Republicans, about this issue of looking like you're callous toward the needs of seniors and the poorest in society, especially when you're also promoting billions in tax cuts.
Gail, do you see a fundamental, permanent, if such a word can be used, change in the chemistry of the Republican majority here? Are we going to see the end of that kind of rock-solid unanimity?
Tom, I think you've seen two turning points in the last couple of weeks. One is the revolt by House conservatives who, with the president's numbers falling, looking to a midterm election with perhaps things not going well in the war, are looking to go back to their base and say, look, we stood for something. We stood for cutting the size of government. We stood for various social issues, but they really forced the House leadership to take that vote on spending cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you see Democrats united as never before. You're seeing Democrats hold unanimously on votes where you saw as many as 10, 20, 30, even 70 Democrats peel off on big votes in the past. And what that's doing is changing the dynamic so that moderate Republicans who used to be able to vote with Democrats, knowing that lots of Democrats would vote with Republicans and it wouldn't be a key vote, now have no cover at all. So it's really exposed the moderates and at the same time given them more power in the direction of the agenda. Republicans are not walking in lockstep and they're not likely to in the future.
So some dramatic challenges in terms of policy here, but also, as you say, hyper-awareness of the midterm elections coming up next year and the records people will take into them.
That's right.
Gail Chadwick with the Christian Science Monitor in Washington. It's always great to have you. Thank you very much for the debrief there.
Thanks.
I'm joined now from Washington by Norman Ornstein, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research, co-author of Intensive Care, How Congress Shapes Health Policy. Norm Ornstein, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Give us your sense of what's going on with the chemistry on Capitol Hill. There's so much more turmoil. We're not used to this since Bush came to town with a big Republican majority. Now suddenly things all over the place. What's happening?
Well, of course, some of this is second-term blues. It almost always happens with it when a president reaches a second term successfully. He's relied on strong party unity because his party members think that their fate and his fate are inextricably linked. And when he's reelected, those fates are detached. They move closer to a midterm election that historically is a disaster for the president's party. He takes on a different time perspective. He's looking at history, and they're looking at the short term. And that's part of what's happening here. But, of course, it's more than that.
Yes.
George Bush governed in his first term in a fashion that almost treated the House of Representatives as a House of Commons. Very closely
Meaning what?
Divided, very closely divided body, but he relied on perfect party unity there and division between the parties. He was a divider, not a uniter for the most part. It worked for him through a first term. But now it's starting to crumble a little bit. And, of course, when you have a divided country in that fashion, if you stumble a little bit, as he did first with Iraq and then with Katrina, your approval rating drops and your party unity declines even more.
So there are structural reasons. It's second term. The president's treating the Congress in a different way. What about on the policy side? Do you have policies now that are putting real cuts in that Republican unity?
Yeah, and that was another, I think, almost inevitability. We went through a first term where the focus was on tax cuts, and then more tax cuts, and then more tax cuts. The first wave of tax cuts, of course, very large ones, but implemented in significant part by manipulating the figures to fit within their budget numbers to show that this wouldn't lead to large deficits and to keep from having points of orders raised.
With sunset provisions and all the rest.
Yeah, all those provisions, including, of course, the most uproarious one of having the estate tax go from its high numbers to zero in 2010 and then be completely reinstated in 2011.
Right.
With all of those and with budget numbers that kept going up through the first 4 years, faster spending increases than under any other president, including Lyndon Johnson, inevitably those chickens come home to roost.
Norm Ornstein, you're at the American Enterprise Institute. How do you interpret congressional interpretations of conservatism right now? Are we seeing a kind of split in the sense of what conservatism means? You wrote just recently, I mean, you've been pretty tough. This is on checks and balances and war powers. You wrote, watching Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez justify the wiretaps, the NSA wiretaps, by relying on the inherent powers of the commander-in-chief suggests that the Bush Justice Department is to checks and balances what Paris Hilton is to chastity. And then you say, does Congress have any cojones? What are you asking for, Norm Ornstein, from your conservative perch?
Well, keep in mind that while my perch is a conservative one, I'm not a garden variety conservative. I'm is sometimes called a raging moderate, one of a dwindling crowd. But interestingly enough, I did another public radio show a couple of days ago with two very strong card-carrying conservatives, David Keene, the head of the American Conservative Union, mm-hmm. and Bruce Fein. And they were tougher on Bush on the wiretaps than anybody I've seen yet, including me. You've got a lot of conservatives who worry about overweening government and who are very concerned about privacy issues. There is a split along lines that we haven't seen very much in the last several years on this set of issues. Of course, part of it being that we're now more than 4 years from 9/11, so the immediacy of that action is behind us. And you've got some who say, well, yes, but of course this vigilance is part of the reason we haven't had another attack. What leaves a lot of conservatives like Fein and Keene uneasy, and the same would be true of Larry Craig, is if you justify an unfettered executive in wartime, and we're defining a war on terrorism that may be infinite, certainly it's indefinite, then you're really opening up some floodgates that would have left the framers very, very uneasy. So on that set of issues, there are certainly differences. We had a couple of games of chicken played on Capitol Hill the last couple of days, games of chicken that the White House was confident it could win, had won before,
and it did not.
A national security card.
Yep.
And that national security card doesn't play as well. It's not just because you've got a few Republicans on their side, although that was a huge part of the deal, but it's also because of a belief that the president's lost some traction here in a general way, and they can stand out there, and public opinion is not going to turn on them.
Such polarized politics on Capitol Hill. Now we're describing some new kind of lines of tension through even the Republican Party. How do you see those unfolding here? Does it move back toward your raging moderate position, or do we stay in the polarized posture?
Well, we have some interesting challenges ahead. For example, the group of Republican moderates in the House, known as the Main Street Coalition, there aren't a whole lot of them, but they have held the balance of power effectively in the House for 5 years now and haven't exercised it. Time after time, when push has come to shove, they have, by and large, gone along with the majority of their party on procedural votes, on substantive votes, often with great misgivings, but that's what they've done. Now they stood up to their party authorities on the drilling in Anwar,
yep.
held held up the budget bill, caused a major setback, two of them actually in the House, and have been walking around crowing and ebullient. How long will that last? And that we just do not know. If it does last, then you can force action to the middle, which is, in this Congress, an unnatural act in a lot of ways because there aren't very many members there. The Senate, with the gang of 14 on the filibuster issue and many other places, has more of a center, but it also has not been exercised much, and you don't have leaders who are inclined to move in that direction. Some of this is going to depend on the president's strategy. Does he decide, looking to the future, deliberately to kind of provoke these partisan dramas so that he can rally his base behind him and at least get his approval rating up near the 50% level? Does he decide that a second term is different and move policy towards the middle? He did it only once in his first term, effectively, which was the No Child Left Behind Act.
Right.
Will we see more of those? I don't have the answer to that, but frankly, you've got to be a little bit skeptical that this will last for any length of time, that we'll actually get a middle emerging.
But when you've got Dick Cheney saying this week in response to the uproar over the NSA surveillance, look, you know, if you're serious about the war on terror, you've got to do what you've got to do. We want to expand the powers of the presidency. And then you've got conservatives, as you describe them, saying, wait a minute, this is going too far. From outside looking in, it looks like a fundamental fissure in the Republican sort of view of the world here.
It is a fissure. Presidential leadership can, in some ways, bring that back together. It can force almost an unnatural unity across some of those lines. Presidential weakness brings us something else. And that presidential weakness will get Democrats very excited, but keep in mind that with a series of domestic issues that remain unsolved and huge deficit problems ahead, with an ongoing war and all kinds of problems out in the world, if what we get is gridlock and inability to move at all, it isn't necessarily good for any of us.
Norm Ornstein at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, thanks very much for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.